Hello, everyone. My name is Luke Jean-Louis, the host of the Deep Voice Man Show. Thanks for joining us today. We have a treat in store for you guys. Our guest is Dr. Connell Wise, and he is an award-winning equitable economic development advisor based out of Washington, D.C., and he is also the founder of Connell Wise & Associates, CWA, which is a social impact boutique advisory firm, which helps low-income entrepreneurs grow and scale. And he enables these firms to grow and scale by eliminating barriers to entry. And he has worked with government and commercial clients around the world, and he's gotten major results for these clients. And he is someone who has done graduate studies at Harvard University, and he also holds a doctorate, which is absolutely amazing. So we are very fortunate to have him here. He's a very busy man, so he was able to carve out some time in his packed schedule to sit down and have a chat with us. So we are very lucky and blessed. So thank you so much for coming on. And I guess to start off, can you talk to us about your background and how you first gravitated towards doing what you do today?
Yeah, well, first of all, thank you for having me on the show. It's an honor to be here. So I guess I have a unique background and history on how I got to where I am, because I just recently turned 31. So I'm definitely the youngest, one of the younger people in the game of what I do. But I started off with my first business actually when I was, 15, turning 16. Years old, many, many years ago. And that business was a journalism company. It was called CWBN, the Connell Wise Broadcasting Network, because at that time I wanted to grow up to be a business – I still wanted to be a business psychologist, but I wanted to be a business journalist too, to be a commentator. But I grew up in Washington, D.C., you know, the nation's capital, but what a lot of people don't know, in the 90s, D.C. actually had one of the highest crime rates and murder rates in the country, and we're only, you know, a city, and one of the larger populations of the district is young people, at least for that time. And I just saw the news always covering the bad things that young men of color, myself being Black Filipino, but young men of color doing in the community, but only highlighting the bad things for like a whole minute to 3 minute segment, but 30 second segment on the good things. And that kind of made me mad, because I was like, the news wasn't advocating or articulating correctly all the good stuff that young people were doing. Like, D.C. had a youth mayor. D.C. had created a youth mayor's program. They had a youth city council. They had youth on the school board. I was like, look at all these things that are doing positive change. So I started that to give young people an outlet to tell the stories around them through their own voice. Because I had gotten into political advocacy work like the year before and got on the board of directors of the National Youth Rights Association, served on that for many, many years. But fast forward, I was running that business, and then I saw there was other young people who was trying to start businesses at this time before youth entrepreneurship was cool, but they didn't have anywhere to turn. There were tons of organizations for adults like the National Federation for Independent Businesses, the U.S. Youth Chamber, the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, and I was a part of all these organizations, but none of them were geared to work with young people uniquely at that time. And especially young people who are coming from communities of color, which typically don't have equitable access to the resources. And so I started an organization called, at that time, National Youth Rights Association, which was a 504 trade association. We later on became a 501c6, a Chamber of Commerce, which became the U.S. Youth Chamber of Commerce. And basically, and I ran that for many years until the second year of the Obama administration because of the economy at the time. But we were representing young people advocacy as a business rights organization, as a Chamber of Commerce, training them all over the country to help them have a voice and say, hey, there are young people under 35, for 16 to 35, who have businesses, but no one takes us seriously because they say, what life experience do we have or what do we offer? But it was tons of kids who were stepping up at that time, because you remember the housing crisis and all that.
Right.
So actually, one of our members, he had made a hot dog stand in his city to support his mom and dad, who both got disabled during the crisis and could no longer work, but Social Security wasn't enough. And the city shut him down because he was 16 years old.
Wow.
and had a hot dog stand, but he had a business license. But I guess they said he was missing too much school, but he had actually enrolled in homeschool, but I guess the city never updated it. But these are just some of the things that I realized that, you know, some of the discrimination and ageism that was happening, that there was no legal constitution for them to be treated that way. So, you know, I still did that for a few years. Once it closed down, I went into government. I worked in the Obama administration at the White House as supporting the volunteer office. I came back out of government, worked in a few different mayoral administrations in the district. I did some time in the Coast Guard, finished my graduate work, and was doing youth development work. And then I got a unique offer. I'm doing work with Youth Venture Ashoka, a youth entrepreneurial organization in Massachusetts for a little while. So I did that. Mm. And then when I came, and then I started losing my vision. So I came back to D.C. because I had a unique eye degeneration disorder, and it took a few years to save money up to actually be able to fully see again. And during that time, though, I got a unique opportunity to become a fellow with the D.C. government, first advocating for D.C. statehood, for us to become the 51st state, and then later on becoming a fellow for an agency called the D.C. Department of Small and Local Business Development. This is kind of wrapping down my story, which is the D.C. government's, I guess, the closest equivalent you can say is a hybrid between, like, the Department of Commerce and SBA mashed into one to help small businesses in D.C. and economic corridors thrive. And I was in the Equitable Development Division, which got me into my work on working with low-income and people of color and other minority groups to help them scale their businesses and become government contractors, because the mayor has a big mission on wanting more small businesses and more people of color and females and LGBTQ plus and veteran businesses be able to do Mayor Bowser to be able to do business here in the District of Columbia. So that's why I left government to get rid of some of the barriers that I had while in government to be able to help support government in their mission on to help these businesses grow, but I can also go where the government can't go, and then they can go where I can't, sort of as that support structure between the two, instead of trying to do everything. I kind of complement what they do, and they complement what I can't do. So,
Wow, that's amazing.
And that's how I got where I am. There's a lot of other stuff, but that's how I got where I am. And then the one thing I would say, I didn't think, you know, I really was going to be able to do it. Until I was doing the work, and then I got recognized by a number of international organizations for the work I did while I was in government and outside. But when really until I got recognized by Forbes and became a member of the Forbes Coaching Council, that really kind of validated that I could leave government and make money on my own. Because I've always had a business, but this would say that I could make enough that I could support myself. You know, now that it's proven it. You know, I could support myself, and I recently adopted a teenager, so like being able to support him and myself, that really has validated that, you know, I took the risk and the risk paid off. But I just made sure I had certain things set up before I left. That's the one thing I would say I did differently.
Wow, that's amazing. Yeah. That's an incredible story. And at 31 years old, you've accomplished so much. You know, my hat is off to you, sir. And
Thank you. You humble me, but thank you.
Yeah, I notice this a lot. A lot of successful people are very humble, but not all, but many. And, and you're a foster parent then, right? I'm guessing. Is that what you call it?
So I was originally a foster parent. I started off in a foster system, or at least becoming one. And then one of my mentees, so I run a mentorship program for young men of color, young men and women. I added working with young women of color about 2 years ago. I just wanted to get my program, started off with young men because I said, if you can create a program that can work with the hardest to serve, then your program can support anyone. So once I got a good program together to serve young men, which we all, young men of color, we all know is the hardest to work with because of the various issues that they have to go through, I said, now I feel more comfortable. Now I can work with young women as well. But one of my mentees one of my youngest mentees, I think only one other one is younger than him, 16, but... I didn't know if I was going to be able to be cut out to be a parent or not. And, you know, I guess my short-term in foster care kind of kind of let me know I was, because I was scared. And, you know, even going through that system, I had to, there's a lot of boxes you have to check off with them, especially with DC. So I felt like, and then with them kind of brushing me and some things and giving me great support and everything, I was just like, oh, am I ready to do this? I helped raise my nieces and nephews, and I've been a mentor for a long time, but I haven't had a kid in my house 24/7 longer than like a month, right? And one of my mentees, who's all my young mentees are all social entrepreneurs, either have their own business or either entrepreneurs inside of an existing organization or entrepreneurs starting their own organizations. And this is one of them who's was just going through a lot of rough stuff in life, and he was always over my house a lot anyway, a lot of times until 8 o'clock at night, right? So I always kind of saw him as like a little brother or as a son already, because he was friends of my best friends of my former foster son. And, you know, he got into a situation right before COVID, and it would have caused him to go into the system and get disrupted. And I said, you know, no, I'm already going to like PTA meetings for you and other things like that anyway to help support your family and give you money when you need it. Yes, I'll step up and, you know, sign the papers. And they just wanted me to do guardianship, and then it just wound up becoming, you know, full adoption. So he's 18 now. We had a couple little bumpy roads with him, more of wrong place, wrong time, and just COVID. But he's doing great now, back in school. College bound with a full scholarship to go to a business degree up to his master's. So we've been able to do that. He won an award from the president for his volunteerism. So great kid, been able to accomplish a lot, definitely a worthy successor. Still have some things that he has to work on and bumps in the road, but it's been my biggest motivation to want to grow my empire, do better, and even give back more. He's always bringing me new people to work with. He says, hey, this kid really needs somebody. Can you help them? And, you know, whatever he wants, he gets. I will say I'm one of those spoiled brat parents. I will say that. But I always said if I had a kid, I was going to spoil them brat rotten, because I was the youngest, so I don't know any better. So I definitely love it. My bank account doesn't love it, but I love it and wouldn't change anything in the world. He gives me everything to wake up for in the morning.
That's amazing. And they say that for a lot of people, their children are their why. And you talked about how he helps you, motivates you to wake up in the morning. And that's incredible. And, you know, having you as a guardian, I think, you know, for him, you know, there's no way he's not going to be successful. You know,
Yeah. 100%. And I would say just, I know, the show has a certain amount of time that, you know, he did get into a little bump in the road with getting in trouble with the police. It was more of wrong place, wrong time. But unfortunately, in D.C., the kids get their own lawyer at 13. And, you know, he was 17 at the time. So he kind of took a plea deal where he could have most likely won the case in court because it was like, I don't know what state you're in, but in D.C. we have these cars called Smart Trip, which they can tap on to get on and off the train and the bus, and his friend gave him one, so he didn't know where it was connected to, and they said it was connected to a crime, and he just took the plea deal, sadly, and they put him through all this stuff, and I was like, it's over, a Smart Trip card, but, you know, having a person like me and me being proactive when he came into my care because of a few other things that he came along with, I had a file, and I already had him in counseling and all these other things, so it helped him out with instead of having to do 2 years of probation, because I have my resources and everything, I was able to get him off in 6 months. He only had to do 8 months in all with house arrest, but in 6 months, and then the crime got expunged and everything. So, but if he had probably lived in the same circumstances he lived in before, I wouldn't know where he would have been, and that probably would have kept me up every night. So I'm just glad I was able to be there and then also teach him the resources. So if he ever gets in trouble again, he'll make, you know, the right decision and won't get pressured, but also be able to help other people around them if they potentially get into that. Because I train all my mentees to be able to be community support workers in a way in their communities around them.
Wow. And that's amazing. And I could feel the passion in your voice. And, you know, before we got on and did this interview, you talked about how you were passionate. And I could definitely see and feel that. but it's great that, you know, obviously you were given so much and you feel the need to give back and to pay it forward, which I think is amazing. And by the way, I agree with you. I think D.C. should be a state. Hopefully that
Thank
happens.
You. Thank you. I'm going to quote you on that. Hopefully the current bill in Congress will help us out. You know, I don't think a lot of people understand, you know, why, if I could do a quick little statehood plug, you know, being coming to 51st state that, you know, we pay the highest taxes per capita in the United States. And, you know, we're outside of that, we're the second highest tax state if you want to go by regular state standards. You know, we have more citizens than two other states in the United States, so nobody can really say, oh, it's because of the population. We're wealthier than 23 other jurisdictions in the United States, including states. And our budget has been balanced since the 1990s because it's federally required. We're only jurisdiction in the country that's federally required to balance our budget. And we fought in every war and occupation in American history, D.C. residents have. So if it's anything, we've checked off the boxes. We're basically Congress piggy bank for and guinea pigs because they can basically run any of their test pilot programs or touch our federal budget for any special projects and things that they want to do. And that's why we say, you know, enough's enough. America is done taking advantage of us because we're kind of treated like third-class citizens.
Right.
Because even territories get to call themselves governor and have a Senate. But D.C. has to stick with a district structure. And at that, we have to function as a city, district, county, but we can't function as a state. But we have to maintain all the other offices a state has to in our small geographical area. If that doesn't say anything, I say if you don't want to make me a state, then make me a territory. The only thing so I don't have to pay federal taxes. But don't make me pay taxes and do everything else. We're required to do everything else as a state, even elect shadow senators, but we don't get representation our full representation in our Congress, and we're the only Western style, I guess, probably a better term for this representative democracy that state capital doesn't have a full voice in its national legislation. You know, we're always censoring China about what they're doing with some of their minority groups, which is very bad, I would say. But America, we're doing the same thing to a city that's predominantly African-American and Latino.
Wow. And, I totally agree with that. And, you know, it's interesting that taxation without representation was one of the reasons why this country wanted to become an independent nation.
Exactly. But we're still allowing it to happen in our nation's capital out of all places.
Right.
And it really is only because of the, in all honesty, because of it being a big urban center for minorities and because of it being a predominantly liberal district that, you know, the Republican counterparts don't want to add another seat to the Democrats' power.
Yeah. And I think that's totally unfair. And, you know, people need to look past that, the politics of it all, and just understand that, you know, look at the fairness of it. And it's interesting. Now, obviously, I actually visited D.C. recently. I've been there a few times. I love the city. I love the history, the museums. I was at the Air and Space Museum, the African-American History Museum, which was amazing.
Oh, you got to see that. That was amazing. That's brand new. Amazing. So.
Yeah. And it's interesting. I think I was going there and there was a go-go concert there, which was nice. And I'd love to visit the city again. It's interesting because obviously the city had a bad reputation. Obviously they had a mayor, you know, who, you know, had issues with drug issues, drugs and whatnot. But obviously there's a lot of great things.
And it happened like 30, 40 years ago, but that's the main thing. But you're right. That's the main thing when most people remember or know about our city. And he, you know, he died about 3 years ago. God rest his soul, did a lot of great things for the city, but a lot of people, you know, and it was a national hero actually too, stopped some domestic terrorists, but a lot of people, you know, they don't hear about that, but they only know the bad things, or they know, don't go to Ward 7 or Ward 8 or Southeast. And it's not even, you know, as bad as it used to be. Maybe a lot of people are still going off of the stereotypes of 20 years ago. And that's a part of, you know, also some of the campaigns to make sure D.C. doesn't get statehood as well, is that some organizations still push out that false information. So, So hopefully I was able to dispel some of it.
Yeah, you definitely did, because obviously when people think of D.C., unfortunately, they do think of that gentleman and the bad things, but not the good things. And, you know, you're educating all of us about that and definitely educating me about it. And when I went to D.C., everyone was very nice. I loved it a lot. I went a lot of different places and whatnot. I stayed in Silver Spring because they say the hotels are expensive in D.C.,
So. Yeah, they definitely can be. You should try to Airbnb. That probably would maybe have been good too. But still, yeah. D.C. is a tri-state area. So D.C., Maryland, Virginia, we partner on a lot of different things together. So a lot of people will stay there from the DMV if they're from, you know, the Beltway,
right.
Inside the Beltway. If you're outside the Beltway in D.C., Maryland, I mean, if Maryland, Virginia, then you probably would say, oh, I'm only from Maryland, I'm only from Virginia. But if they're from the DMV area, you know, they're proud and loud about it. So.
Oh, wow. Definitely. It's definitely a city I want to definitely visit again and actually spend some time in and whatnot. And
definitely.
Explore.
If you come again, definitely let me know. I'll give you a personal tour of all the nooks and crannies and places that they probably don't tell you about. So.
Okay, great. I'm definitely going to take you up on that, actually. Thank you so much for that. Love the museums. And I'm sure there's more to it than that are great. I'm curious. Now, obviously, you work with a lot of businesses, nationally and internationally, and you've helped a lot of firms and whatnot. We all know what happened, you know, unless one's living under a rock. We got hit with a big sucker punch with the pandemic. I'm curious, how would you describe the current state of affairs with business and entrepreneurialism, and what challenges has the pandemic posed, if any?
Yeah. Well, how I would say the state of entrepreneurship, and, you know, some people, you probably wouldn't agree with me. I would say it actually is strong, right? And strong in a way where when you look at economic downturn, if you look at economics, you see that more people start their own businesses during downtimes in the economy than they do with good times in the economy. Because if you have a good job and good pay during the good times of the economy, you're not most likely going to want to leave your job.
Mm-hmm.
Like, again, you know, you always have the outliers, the people who are weird. But this is the time when more people start their businesses. And this is also one of the times where people start to invest more money in the area, the pain areas that they see in the economy. So they come up with ideas of, like, maybe somebody, for example, this didn't happen during this pandemic, but let's use Airbnb.
Mm.
People were getting frustrated that they couldn't find apartments or find cheap places to live in their city, but maybe somebody had a room or something that they could rent out. During good times, you probably wouldn't rent out the extra room because you don't need the money. But during the economy downturn, you may need to help try to find a roommate or find a second source of income because you lost your job. And Airbnb or Uber, for example, or different things like that, offered opportunities for you to make a side hustle and make that additional money or take that plunge where you were too scared to do doing when you had your regular job, but now you really don't have a choice that you had to. And I would say that's on new entrepreneurship and self-employment creation. Like my firm, we do, the main people we work with is people who either start their own business or run a family business or are self-employed /1099s. Like we only work with those populations, either you run a business or you want to be you may not want to leave your day job, but you want to be, 1099, or you want to be fully self-employed. Maybe you don't want to incorporate, you just want to be a freelancer. And we really push that narrative with our entrepreneurs. So I would say, especially when we're coming through our lens, our organization is established to help them not only create the business, but connect them to all the resources as a part of the ecosystem, because we're ecosystem builders. And it may be a little bit different here in D.C. than other places, but my firm, we help them start the business, we help them with the business plan, we help them build their personal and their business credit separately from their EIN. I'm actually a certified financial social worker. We connect them to access to capital. We call it our hand-holding program. Like I tell a lot of people, not only being a business psychologist or a doctor of business, I'm also like I just mentioned, a certified financial social worker. So I look at finance more through a mental health lens than just in a social service lens than just helping you fix your credit. Because we also help connect them to wraparound services that the federal government and district or Maryland or Commonwealth of Virginia government offers to the entrepreneurs. So a lot of times they'll pay for other things that they didn't know. about right. like most people don't know, in most states, if you contact your EPTL, which stands for your Eligible Training Providers List, which is State Labor's Authority, there's training that they will pay for on your behalf, either if you're underemployed or unemployed, or even sometimes you may still be employed or qualified. Like some states will pay for C++, Network Plus, broker's licenses, real estate classes, entrepreneurship, notary public, different things that people did. They're paying out their own pocket. And the state paid for, like the state literally paid for my project management credential and the whole shebang. But a lot of people don't know this is a nationwide program. But it's like when I say connect you to these wraparound services, there's a lot of things out there that people don't know that they could be a part of. D.C. government gives out money as microloans to entrepreneurs if they qualify. But they don't know these things exist. And then they go to traditional financial institutions when they don't, when there's tons of other organizations like CDFIs, microlenders, other lending institutions that are better suited for them. So helping the entrepreneur understand that, you know, you just don't have to just depend. Everybody, every entrepreneur, and I'm pretty sure you heard this in your day job, grants.
Right.
What grants can I get? And I said, unless you start a nonprofit, there's not that many grants, and there's not that many startup grants. There are some for for-profits, but there are even not that many startup grants for nonprofits, those capacity-building grants. Those don't exist as much, and when they come, they're very highly competitive and limited. So I hate, and I try to educate entrepreneurs so much on what does it mean to get a loan. Don't be scared of the word loan, because first of all, the only people should be scared of loans, because they always say, I don't want to have to pay it back, is the people that when they say that, I say, you already telling me, but you saying you don't want to have to pay it back. You're a person that's not good with money, one. You're a person who probably would take more than they need. I mean, they would take what they want, not what they need. And, you know, just helping them develop those healthy pathways and stop being scared of the word loan. Stop being scared of your credit score, taking that back. Like, a lot of you can't be an entrepreneur and you ignore these things. Or I work with you and you come with me with the shoebox worth of receipts, helping me automate your business to make it. So, because, like, when COVID hit, my business was – I pivoted some. It was hurt a little bit, but I was mostly on the government contracts, so they had to stop spending in areas. But I just pivoted. I opened up four other lines of business for me. Like, we started doing delivery services, making money off of that. We're picking up the scooters. I don't know if they have them in the area. You are getting paid, charging that. You know, that's anywhere between $3 and $6.50 a scooter that we get paid charging per night. So our business is bringing, you know, from these two programs, about $300 to $400 a day in revenue. 7 days a week, and that's bringing in a whole new stream of revenue that I wouldn't even thought about getting as a business development organization. It started us doing more stuff in, like, court reporting and notary signing and different other services that we didn't realize, but they're bringing in a lot of capital that's at the point of competing against what government contracts and grants that we got in the past to do, but it's bringing in daily, if not weekly, if not daily income into the business. So not only did I have to transform, it helped me transform the resources that I now can connect to my entrepreneurs, because just because we're helping a lot of them start a business, sometimes we also need to help them find a 1099 opportunity so that they can make that additional income to sort of help keep the lights on for their self at home and pay for things for the business until the business can stand on its own 2 feet and make the money that they need from their job. Because unfortunately, and then I'll wrap this up, is that a lot of entrepreneurs will even leave their job before when they start the business, before they should have. I tell people, look, don't leave your job until you have about 3 months worth of 3 to 6 months worth of living expenses that you can live off of. Or if, you know, if you're one of the people that you already own your house, you own your car, you own your other things, you may be in a little bit different situation, or at least have a part-time job, at least if you're leaving, so you can have that additional income until your business can make enough income to sustain not just the business but you, instead of you paying peekaboo, I see you, we're paying your bills this month and then paying the business's bills this month. But I would say for the most part, a lot of entrepreneurs we're working with, the state of entrepreneurship is just that having business, being able to pivot and pivot to a business idea that makes money, and making sure that the founders don't get founder syndrome and refuse to adapt digitally and adapt and continue to adapt digitally. Just because COVID restrictions are lifting, or even if we go back from COVID, keeping your business digital as much as possible is going to be the way that you can have that continuity plan and keep your business afloat. Knowing your numbers, if you don't know your, we found out so many entrepreneurs helping them with PPP, and we're still helping them with PPP and EIDL and all those things and doing their taxes, is that, and we serve nationally, by the way. So if anybody listening to this needs help, let us know. We hold your hand the whole way. Is that if you don't know your numbers, you don't know your business at the end, point blank, period. And we found that a lot of entrepreneurs didn't know their numbers and still don't. So educating them about finance in a way that doesn't bore them or boggle them down. We're not trying to make you a bookkeeper, not trying to make you an accountant, but just trying to give you the basic knowledge of the financial lifeblood of your business. I can't tell you how many businesses I know that their accounting is that they have bank statements. That is not accounting. That does not help you when the government is asking your numbers. And now, and because then all you guys, a lot of them come, is now they have crying because they have to pay all these extra fees to bookkeepers or CPAs or accountants to get these things done, and they don't want to spend that money. But again, it's like you have to spend money to make money as well. So your business money is not your money. You need to be putting money aside for a rainy day for these additional services. Just because you don't need them yet doesn't mean you don't need them eventually. So that's the other quick thing I would say, is that the business I work with, a lot of them, we not all of them listen, but 90% of them listen, and they create a business savings account. So a lot of them had some savings for their business, but not all. And it didn't have to be big. Even them having like $2,000 helped them out tremendously than anything. But I would say, you know, entrepreneurship, it's strong. It's getting better. It differs from state to state. But I say as long as you're able to pivot, fell fast, fell forward, pivot fast. You don't have to go off your mission too much. We're still able to do our other things. But by us doing these other two things, like I said, it provided 1099 opportunities for our business owners who needed an extra, you know, pivot or extra revenue stream during COVID to be able to make additional money, or allow them to be able to now get PAU that also helps their family because they were doing this additional 1099 opportunity. So that COVID was a blessing and a curse in disguise, I would say.
Wow. And thank you so much for that. And you talked about how it has been a blessing in many ways, and how a lot of businesses are actually doing well because so many people are going into business and starting side hustles. I was talking to one guest. He said that there's an entrepreneurial explosion coming our way, a big wave.
Exactly.
So, you know, people like you who advise businesses and whatnot definitely are going to be – the demand for you guys is going to be going up. So you're kind of positioning yourself well for that trend. And you talked about how the downtimes, a lot of people start businesses, and that's true historically, because during the Great Depression, I think a lot of great businesses were started during that time. And so,
because you have no other choice, right? You don't have a choice. You either adapt or die.
Right.
And I think a lot of traditional W-2s are now realizing that too. It's like, I have to have something other than a W-2. That's what I tell people. You don't have to quit your day job. That's why we say we work with 1099s. And people who want to be self-employed. You can keep your day job, but a lot of people don't understand where you are at 1099. You are a business. You might be a micro business, but you're still a business. That's why the SBA and the past presidency and this presidency said that independent contractors can apply for these programs, because we realize that these people are businesses too. They're still props, but they're still businesses. And especially with a lot of international people, some of the discrimination that they get in this country, it's the only opportunity that they had. And, you know, a lot of them own businesses back in their home countries. So it's just something that they didn't want to come here and then, you know, go work for somebody when they were used to working for themselves or their family business for 10 to 20 years. You know, how do you go back to being a W-2 employee after being your own boss and calling your own shots for 20 years and coming to a country where not always your credentials or your experience is recognized?
Wow. And that must be tough, you know, coming to a new country and dealing with those kinds of difficulties and that kind of ordeal and whatnot. And but you help business owners. You mentioned that word grant. And if I were ever to start a business, I'd come to you to find out what grants and loans I can get.
Exactly. And I would adapt and find out not only what grants in microloans or traditional capital, alternative capital we connect you to, but also what we do is we would do basically we create sort of like, you know, your career development plan for you, your self-employed development plan. And basically we say, okay, this is, you say, okay, Dr. Wise, I want to be a bookkeeper. And I say, have you had any years in bookkeeping? Like, no, maybe I have like 1 year of helping my friend do his taxes and all this other stuff. I say, okay, well, my job is to help you find the easiest and fastest way. And some people can go through the front door. Sometimes you got to get creative and go through the back door for them. So what I would do is I would connect you to an organization to help you get a certificate in bookkeeping, something that was easy to get that you can start off with. And then once you get that, because that's the lowest investment, then we would help you then get the, you know, the more recognized credential from the industry, but something at least to break you in, help you develop the business, help you get a micro loan and a credit building loan if your credit's not where it needs to sort of help you start building it while you're going through that first 6 months of business development, and we'll try to set you up with either some paying clients as a paid internship, or try to find one of our clients who already ended who's going to serve as like your business coach, personal business coach. I'm more of your executive coach, and help you get that experience, right? And help you learn before, while we're incorporating the business, building your website, doing the other things to build your portfolio up. And after those 6 months to a year, then we would help you then start your, help you start marketing and get into the business. But over our 6 month virtual incubator, we'll help you build the, get the business license, get the LLC or whatever structure you want to be, help you build up your business credit and your personal credit, help you get connected to any city or federal or state services that you may be able to, because a lot of times they'll certain things for you as well. And then we would, you know, make sure you have all your credentials, your LinkedIn is looking good, your resume is looking good, and then make sure you're also part of, you know, your state and maybe your state CPA society and the National CPA Association or the National Association of Public that's sort of how we kind of tied a bow. And then at the end of the year, then we push you out there, and then we try to make sure that, you know, you're looking good with your nice credentials. If we can get you a certification with a designation behind it, that's always a bonus. I'm a big advocate of trade school and community college. I went all the way through. I have an associate's degree. I got every level of degree there is. But that was because I specifically wanted to do a specific thing in my career, and I'm able to do that, and not only able to do that job that I wanted to do since I was 16, I'm actually able to do it as self-employed versus being stuck in a bigger consulting from a government, which I love the government, don't get me wrong. I'm probably going to go back in and run for office one day. I'm actually the treasurer of one of my closest friends, race for state senate, and I'm a state representative in Florida. So I'm still in politics. My business does a lot, but these are the main things that we focus on, is that I would say with people that it's great to have an advisor, great to have a coach. You know, I'm recognized by the Forbes Coaching Council as one of the best in the world. But the thing, but I'm also in such a subset of a small part of the coaching industry that there's also not many people in it. Right. And now more and more people are popping up to work with the populations I do, but they didn't exist 5 years ago when I started. But I would say, do your due diligence too. Don't just go off of somebody like, yes, I went to Harvard. But don't just go off of that. I'm saying that because I have other classmates and people who went to Harvard. Most people are really good at what they do, but there are some people who went to Ivy Leagues or other schools and have shiny credentials. You need to look at not just their credentials, but let me see the people you claim you work with. Let me see, ask to see testimonies. Google them. To try them out for a month. Don't just dump all the money they ask for. Have a small project, see what they did, see how much they stay in contact with you. I call all my clients at least once a month. I want to call them more, but at least once a month. Most of my clients would say that I treat them more like friends and family when I'm talking to them, because I don't just jump into business. I ask about their lives. I listen. Sometimes we don't even talk about business that day. We're talking about, you know, the problems that they have. Your coach, and I don't even like to call myself as a coach as much. I like to call myself more of an advisor, because they should be growing with you. They should feel like family. I've gotten invited over to Thanksgiving, Christmas. I've even had a client when I was applying, when I was having a trouble one time, because I got hit out of nowhere with getting in a car accident, and one of my contracts got paused. It was about 5 months ago. One of my federal veterans, but because I was Coast Guard myself, but I was a different part of it, so I don't normally like to call myself a veteran. I like to call myself a former service member, but everybody still wants me to. But anyway, I digress. He gave me a $4,000 loan.
Wow.
And he said, don't even bother paying me back, because you have been there so many times for me and my family and helped me out. And I almost broke down into tears, because who just comes out of nowhere, offers you $4,000 because, you know, you want to make sure you're still able to pay your employees so that they don't go hungry. And it's not a lot, but I got into a car accident out of nowhere, and I had to pay, you know, $12,000, $15,000for all these different things. But I was personally making no money, because I was waiting for my GEICO policy, which still hasn't paid out, to pay out to me. For my personal expenses, because I was spending $12,000 to make sure my employees could still eat, even though they couldn't, you know, do the job. I said, just because you couldn't do job, this is me getting hit by, you know, a big UPS truck and having to go into the hospital and get, you know, physical therapy. And, you know, I had great coverage, but I didn't have coverage that covered me. And I didn't know that. And so it was something to learn from. It was my first vehicle, something to learn from. It wasn't my fault, but still, I just have that relationship with a lot of my clients, and I feel, I'm not saying to anybody out there listening, do the same thing with your coach and everything, because not everybody you can trust with money. But I would say you don't want to have a coach that you didn't do your due diligence on, even if it's just a friend's recommendation, because that coach still might not be the right coach for you. Because I'll even tell my clients when I'm doing that assessment, I might not be the right person for you, but I'll connect you to a person who's better. I'll still be there to help you out with certain things, but I might be a better life coach than I would be a business advisor. Some of my clients, I am a coach. Other clients, I'm an advisor. And I see those as two different, I see those are two different roles. But I would say, finally, what I would say, too, is learn a little bit. And that's why we have the Wise Institute, where they can earn over 750 certifications in different fields. Because if we don't offer the credential, we help you find somewhere that does. But have a little bit of basic knowledge on either entrepreneurship, small business, management, or bookkeeping, selfish plug, we offer all that, and nonprofit management and grant writing. But have that basic knowledge so you know whoever you're hiring, either as an employee or as an advisor, and excuse my French, knows what the fuck they're talking about. Because a lot of people are great at using big words, but they don't know what they're talking about. Or they're good. They went to school for it. They went to school 10 years ago. They don't do CE classes, continuing education. Right. I am a member of every professional association for whatever my company offers. I hold the license in every field of whatever my company offers, even if I have somebody else who actually does the work, just so I know a little bit about it. And so if I lose the access to that person, I can still do some bridging and still help connect until I can find someone that can sort of to do it. But it's just that also I want to know when I'm hiring you, you know what to do. Like I had to become, when I told you what's happened with my son, I want to. A PI license because, you know, my son got in trouble. And, you know, me learning all this investigative stuff, I want to be qualifying for a PI license, and, you know, now that's an extra service where now I can offer it to my clients, but also offer background checks of things when they're hiring, which is something that a lot of them started to need more in COVID because they're having to get, I wouldn't say more desperate with hiring, because some people are making more on unemployment than they are with employment, but they're just trying to make sure that they can be safe because they may not be able to have all the protocols they had in place pre-COVID. When it comes to employment. But I'm just saying, it opened up, one, it opened up more opportunities. Two, the state of entrepreneurship is better than ever. And three, I would say, too, you know, what we can offer may be different than what we can offer, but I would say always do your research. I always tell people, look, this is my advice, this is the opposition, and this is a third party. You choose your research, but I never want you to say, oh, Dr. Wise told me, because I never want blind sheep. I want to educate you to make your own choices. If you want me to do everything for you, I have a special package where it says, I call it the lazy package,
right.
And I just do everything for my clients. But most of them, I'm going to say probably 25% of them pick that one. But I would say do your own research. Don't be a blind sheep just because somebody has some letters behind their name,
right.
Even if they're government or not. Because sometimes, again, we may be thinking we're giving you the best information in the world, but we don't realize that we gave you something that was outdated or something changed yesterday in the news. Look,
right.
PPP changes has been changing every daggone week with the requirements. So I'm just saying government changes fast. The world had to learn how to adapt. The world had to learn how to go digital. Studies have shown that most businesses said even after COVID, they plan to make sure that their employees are still commuting. I'm virtually commuting 3 days a week. Some businesses said we're getting rid of our offices completely and we're just keeping our employees at home because they're actually being more productive at home. We're seeing parents say, hey, I don't want my child to return to traditional school. I like them going to school online and me being able to be at home and working so I can spend more time with them when they're done with their work. Because a lot of parents said they're sick of seeing their kids throw up right in front of them and not being able to see them. So I think the world has changed forever and it will not go back. After COVID, my business is already digital because, as you know, my business is here in the U.S., but we're also separately incorporated in Hong Kong and Mauritius, doing the same work we're doing here, trying to bring it to other countries that have the same sort of weird status as D.C., but economics in D.C. D.C. has the highest population of wealthy people of color, disparity gap from wealthy people of poverty. There is no middle class in D.C. The mayor's working very hard to develop one, that building pathways to the middle class. That's even our own mission, building equitable pathways to the middle class, because giving one size fits all doesn't work anymore, and everybody's situation is different. That's why you'll always hear me throw out that we're equitable. We're working in other places like Mauritius, like Hong Kong, which have huge growth opportunities, big entrepreneurial hubs, but they have this big disparity when it comes from being rich or poor, and there's nothing in between. Because in those three places, including D.C., being poor in D.C. is totally different than being poor anywhere else in the country. Anywhere else in the country, you probably won't be poor. You're probably closer to lower middle class. But in D.C., it's like, I know people say, man, I can't afford to pay my $2,000 a month in rent. And then I know other people say, I can't afford to pay my $500 a month in rent.
Wow.
So you got $1,500. You got more money than me. So that's what I'm just saying. It's totally different, but also getting government to realize that we have to update what it means to not just the minimum wage. I'm glad the president is trying to do something about that, but that's not going to help anybody if you don't do a cap on people being able to raise rent. That's not going to do anything if you don't change what the national income average is on saying, oh, if you make $30,000 a year, you know, you're considered to be homeless in America. I know people making $40,000 a year but have three or four kids or live in a city that's really expensive like D.C. where they say, oh, $60,000 a year is too much money, but you're like, I have four kids, but they're not changing because they're going off the federal poverty guidelines. Things don't change if we don't also have businesses changing, but if we don't also don't have smart legislation changing along with it. I'm so sorry. I know I get on a soapbox like you know I did.
No worries.
I'm very passionate on what I did. I know I bounced around there, but as you see, some things I had to get off my chest and had to let America know so that other people can say, look, talk to your elected officials as well. Get involved. Serve on commissions and boards. You don't always have to vote to make a change, but don't be apathetic or agnostic to the problems you're seeing around you. One person can totally make a difference. I make a difference in 1,000 people a year. It's not a lot, but I think it's a lot to me. And a lot of those people are then there. If those 1,000 people are each able to touch 5 or 10 people, your impact grew. You kind of got to do it like a virus. One person talks to two people talk to three people, and that's how you make the world change. And that's why I try to make everybody who I touch, you know, a little bit of a community support worker, have a little bit of the skills to identify other people who are in their situations. And if they can't help them, connect them to me, or I'll connect them to somebody that can help them. And not just here in D.C., but I can help you anywhere in the nation and almost anywhere in the world, really, through my mentors and things like that. I can definitely connect to people all around the world. I have a great mentor. That's one of the other things I would say has made me successful. It's the four biggest mentors in my life. I'm with five, I would say, three of which are females. who I think have been the biggest impact in my life, being raised by a single mother and two big sisters. But my main mentor since I was a kid, Vicki Corman, who's an environmental lawyer here in D.C., who also took the plunge of being a government lawyer for years and finally started her own law practice about two or three years ago. So that was a big motivation for me. Her always telling me, you know, to make sure I'm helping the world at large and putting a little bit more back into what I take out. My other mentor, Heather Grill, who works for, she oversees Apple's government affairs for Asia, but she, you know, was the first person who believed in me, and I was a kid who had a learning disability and had an IEP and all these things, and then people were telling me to dream small, but her and Vicki were the only people that ever told me, and I never even heard this, and they're both not, like I said, I'm Black Filipino, they're both Caucasian, but they both were telling me that, you know, you're not limited to your disability. And I never heard that from anybody. And it was just like, it was refreshing. It was sad that I had to hear from somebody who didn't look like me, but it also showed me that, you know, other races aren't the enemy, and they are truly allies. And, you know, they believed in me, and which probably prompted me to want to go off and get into an Ivy League instead of going to a regular school, because I wanted to not only show myself, but show other people around me. And trust me, I went to other schools, undergrad, that weren't Ivy, but it's just like showing people who also had a learning disability or had, you know, lost a vision or had these different things that I've always found a way to achieve my stuff. If it's from getting to an Ivy, from getting into military, even with diabetes, or getting into, you know, a prestigious fellowship with the government, or being able just to do the stuff I've been able to do since I'm 31. I basically accomplished 99% of all my goals that I wanted to accomplish by the time I was 30. The last one actually came around the time of my 30th birthday was the adopt. And I was able to do that. And that's why I said that's what's a huge goal for me in life was to be able to become a parent. Because I see that as the noblest and hardest job to do. To be the CEO of a house and especially be a CEO of a company and then being the CEO of your household and being a teacher and being a bunch of other things, you know, especially parentpreneurs had to definitely wear a couple of additional hats. I'm going to say definitely for females who are raising, and not only that, just single men too, but definitely females who are raising a household had to wear a bunch of extra. That's why I said I have the most respect in the world for female entrepreneurs. But I would say the only other thing about that is that the last two mentors that I had was a mentor that I had, which got me into, you know, my degree in divinity, was my mentor, John Mean, who does a lot of stuff in youth development, which really got me into wanting, you know, to help back young people. And he was my youth pastor when I was a kid. And then actually my first ever Black mentor, all the other ones weren't, but was still my mentor, Heather Grail. I mean, I'm sorry, Hillary Sadler, who works over at the Commerce Department and International Trade Administration. She's the first time I ever met somebody in government who was a high-powered Black attorney. And she's still not where she should be in government. She should definitely should be higher, but that's all government politics and bureaucracy. But she talks to me weekly. She educates me about international affairs, where I was trying to find a mentor for a long time and nudge me to go international and nudge me to take clients, and which had became a great additional area and has got me into the work in Hong Kong and Mauritius. What I should got to say, I would have never probably took that plunge and been able to do that if I didn't see someone, one that looked like me, one that showed me that, you know, I wasn't that weird duck, because she was a Fulbright scholar and a very smart young person too. So I always kind of felt weird being a Black person in some of the circles, and also being the youngest, and especially when it came to international, being a hybrid. All that stuff played, I would say, I'm a very confident person, if you couldn't tell. But it's still, you know, we all still have that inner voice in the back of your head where you think you maybe have fraud syndrome or different things. And I'm one of those people who have a simple man complex. So I definitely have an unhealthy need to help people. So sometimes that can be a blinder for me. And that's been my biggest downfall, is sometimes helping people that I shouldn't help and putting too much energy in it, which has caused me to ignore my own personal health. So, but this year, and since I became a parent, I said, no, I can't do this anymore. I have to think differently. I have to step up. And, you know, I've been doing good ever since, got my diabetes and everything under control, started recovering from a bunch of my injuries. And, you know, business is doing better. It can always do better, but business is doing better. I'm able to still, you know, keep the lights on, pay my rent, make sure my son has everything that he wants and deserves. You know, making sure I'd be providing, you know, not many full-time, but at least 8 part-time positions to young people between the ages. I hired a bunch of people between the ages of 16 to 28, because a lot of them, they don't want to do bad things. They just want somebody to give them a shot with a job. And that's been able to help me, you know, be able to keep them employed. And we hope to grow our program so we can get older people and even other people employed. We're currently working on a program to even help seniors get into entrepreneurship and self-employment. So, I guess I can get off my soapbox now. But, that's everything in a nutshell, I would say.
Wow, that's amazing. Thank you so much for that. And the soapbox for you is amazing. This whole show is meant to be a soapbox for successful people. So I'm glad you see it that way. And that's more than fine. Nothing to apologize for. Everything was amazing. You actually answered a lot of the questions that I was going to give you anyway.
And I'm sorry about that, because I know everybody always sends some sample questions, but that's not always what they, you know, stick to. So I was trying to make sure, when I was looking at me being a former reporter, just making sure I was going off of all those boxes of some of the things we talked about through email. So I'm sorry if I didn't give you the chance to say it. I was just trying to say, oh, he also was talking. I know he was talking about this. So check. So definitely.
Yeah.
I'm glad you understood.
Yeah.
I'm glad.
No, it's more than fine. And it's definitely okay. And it's great that you're utilizing, you know, this platform, and that's what it's meant to be. And this is obviously an episode I'm going to be listening and re-listening to. You mentioned a lot of great stuff. You talked a lot about your mentors and, you know, the people that inspired you. And I find you yourself to be inspiring. Of course.
Thank you.
And
the one person I wouldn't have mentioned, if you don't mind, is that I think the biggest person that made me want to become a business psychologist and wanted me to get into entrepreneurship, and excuse if I cry about it because I'm a big baby when it comes, is my mother. She has been one of those people that's always wanted to do entrepreneurship, kind of was, I wouldn't say hustler for the best of project. She was like that entrepreneur without the guidance when she was younger, when she was growing, when she was raising 4 kids. She had some good small ventures and had some bad things, but nothing that was really formalized. And it always, not only with that, but her struggle with, you know, stress and mental health and stuff. One made me want to get into psychology, but 2 made me want to get specifically into business psychology. To say, well, entrepreneurs could be successful, but if you have something else going on health-wise or mental health-wise, that might be what, or your disability wise, that might be what's stopping you from being successful. Might be your education or your determination, because a great entrepreneur, and if anybody hasn't read this book, read Angela Duckworth's book on grit. It's a great book, and I would say, you know, just having people, even mentioned in her book, she said if people who had mentors or people who had, you know, advisors who helped them, who came from lower income or had other barriers to entry, were more likely successful than ones who didn't have a person like me or an equivalent thereof. So that's why I'm just trying to be that person in the world, because I knew how much mentors and advisors played in my life. And if I didn't have it growing up in D.C. in the 90s, I probably would have took a different pathway. Or I probably would have been dead. Most of, like 12 of my friends died. We were only 12 to 14 in a 1-year span. And I just said I didn't want to be one of them. And that's why I got into entrepreneurship. And if I didn't have mentors, didn't earn the scholarships that I earned throughout my life through different special programs, I would have probably been dead or worse. What's really worse than death, I guess imprisonment. But other than that, but I just also said, I would say if you don't want to get a business advisor, at least try to find somebody who's going to be a positive mentor. Don't take somebody because they're toxic just because they have connections or different things like that. Don't let anybody ever talk down to you. But find somebody that's good for you. The biggest thing I would say is have that support circle. I can't stress that enough. Your family can be your support circle, but you have to have that support circle of entrepreneurs. You have to have that support circle of people who are in your industry. You can have multiple support circles, but you need that, and make sure you have a work-life balance. Don't be like me, who had to go in the hospital a few times because he overworked. And that's me being an IO psychologist, me telling you that you got to have a work-life balance. We're rid of people that always says to have it, and I just recently developed one. But this is doctor's orders. Everybody, make sure you have time for your family. Make sure you have time for yourself, and make sure you have a support circle, because your entrepreneurship life is already lonely, even with a significant other. But entrepreneurship can be even lonelier, and sometimes those voices, those naysayers, those hecklers come. Don't listen to them, because everybody's journey is different.
Right. Right.
You have to make sure you're making the best out of what you have. But also, even if you don't have people locally, join online platforms where you can find friends, or do virtual or virtual meetups, or even in COVID, do Zooms with your friends, Zoom happy hours. Get out the house if you can't do it virtually. Talk to people. Join forums. Be educated. I read 8 different newspapers every morning before I start my day, or I listen to the podcast versions on my Alexa. And I read articles. Like, educate yourself. Don't just sit there. Even if you're not starting a business, educate yourself on the business you want to go into. Join, like you said, listen to podcasts, read articles, educate yourself past what you're doing. You can always continue to learn, no matter how educated you are or experienced. There's always something that you can learn. I'm a student of life. I try to live up to my last name, and I never feel like you never stop learning, never stop growing.
Wow, and that's amazing. And thank you so much for that. And you mentioned a lot of critical, vital life lessons. And thank you so much for that. And you gave a lot of great advice for people who are entrepreneurs or people who are looking for a coach. So thank you so much for that. And, you know, for you to accomplish all your major goals by 30 years old is incredible. You know, I think that's, you know, it's rare when I meet someone like that. But, you know, when I do, I'm always astounded. And you've accomplished more than people twice your age.
Thank you.
And I think I think your story is great. And I'm curious now, obviously you talked a lot about how, you know, you succeeded with the help of others and standing on their shoulders of others as well. I'm curious, when it comes to meeting people and building relationships, networking, it's so critical. And not just for entrepreneurs, but also for job hunters, people who are looking for work, who are unemployed, or who want a better job if they're already employed or realizing no job is secure, they still have to look. What advice would you give to folks when it comes to networking?
Okay, I would say this book, I knew a lot of this stuff, but I would say this book definitely helped me when I was in business school, International Business School, which is a great school. If you guys haven't heard of it, check it out. Them and Bay Atlantic University got some phenomenal programs in how they're rethinking entrepreneurial education and small business.
Mm-hmm.
But I read a book called Networking Like a Rockstar, and it basically was saying the book lived up to its title. I got to speak to the guy. Arthur was a little bit cocky, but, you know, it's understandable. He was able to accomplish the things that he was able to accomplish.
Mm-hmm.
But that book taught me some things, and I would always say I was already a networking rock star. But I would say, like I said, you want to go out there doing either joining forums, like joining national associations. A lot of times they'll have forums, or they'll have yearly conferences when it's not COVID. But a lot of people are still doing virtual conferences. So
wow.
I would say joining those, getting out there, letting people talk to people, writing articles on like LinkedIn and different platforms that will allow you to be published. That helps you start to position yourself as a thought leader. A lot of people are finding me every day more and more through my LinkedIn.
Wow.
I can't tell you how much business I've gotten through LinkedIn or other platforms or just word of mouth. I would say making sure you also own your own online identity, making sure you have a fully complete profile on all the platforms you are, making sure you check in once a month to make sure that your information that is out there on you publicly is up to date and correct. I tell people, own your identity before someone owns it for you. And that means that on a three different areas, either the government's going to control your identity, you're going to control your identity, or some third party that you don't know who is going to control you. And that could be nefarious or not, right? It's the same thing with the credit bureaus. A lot of people don't understand you don't have business credit. Most of the credit bureaus are going to report you bad with business credit if they don't know information on you. So that's, again, saying people need to control their identity, not just with the social media, but with financial institutions and other institutions and with your own credit. But it's saying that owning your online brand, because most people, when I meet people, I Google them or look them up on LinkedIn. Or if somebody didn't have a business card, I'd be like, make sure you ask them. And a lot of people don't do this, but it's still okay if you really don't. But I say ask to be courteous. I heard you don't have a business card. Do you mind if I add you on LinkedIn? Do you mind if I add you on Facebook? Because I have some people, it's only a business relationship, but then they're trying to connect with me on personal platforms like LinkedIn. I don't have too much of a problem with it, but some people will because they try to separate their business from their personal. So asking people is just showing people, one, you're courteous, and two, you have manners, but three, that you're not trying to, because sometimes you come off desperate if you're trying to connect with them on multiple different platforms is the same as calling the person every day. But two, making sure all your platforms are good, because if I Google you and you pop up with sexy party girl 93, and then, you know, you're a little bit wild. Everybody was a little wild in their college days or their younger days. Move that. That could stop you from getting jobs. Trust me, like people like me who are really good with technology like I am, or really good with investigating like I am, hence the investigator's certification. I'm government trained, so I can find some stuff on people. So I tell people, Own your image before. You'd be surprised what I brought to interviews with people with me, and they're like, how did you get that photo? I'm like, if I can find it, if somebody wanted hard enough to find it, they can find it. So really going out there, controlling that, making sure you're keeping up with your credit report too and all that, because what if you do a business deal and then somebody from a networking engagement, then they look at your credit, and if your credit's all janked up, as long as you're in credit counseling, people will make the, you know, or something, or you're trying to repair it. Don't be out here. You got $300,000 in student loans, and you think that you think the federal student loans thinks you're dead, and they know you're not dead. But just controlling that online image, controlling your personal image. If you're not the best public speaker, taking public speaking classes, doing Toastmasters, getting better to speak in front of people. Taking classes in presentation skills in case you have to give a presentation or something, because it's another way to network. Taking a writing class maybe to get better at writing, or partnering with a writer who can help you edit your papers when you're putting out articles. That's another way of networking with people, is putting that out. What you're doing, making podcasts, making video blogs, writing a blog. These are all different ways to network for different types of people, especially if you're introverted versus extrovert. And obviously, I'm an extreme extrovert, right? but a lot of people I work with, especially a lot of tech people and a lot of entrepreneurs, a lot of young people, they're introverted extroverts or they're extreme introverts. So I would say that. And I would say also, lastly, don't judge a book by its cover. And don't just not talk to somebody, maybe you're at a thing, because maybe they have a physical disability or something. Because you'd be surprised. I have people who have done that. They're like, oh, I don't want to talk to him. He's in a wheelchair. Or I don't want to talk to her because, you know, she slightly has autism or Down syndrome. And they were multimillionaires, and they missed their chance. You know what I mean? Because people judge them and say, oh, he's probably been through a lot through his whole life, but he's only been in a wheelchair for the last year. You know what I mean? So it's like, I would say, don't judge a book by its cover. And then, you know, that might actually be more beneficial. I would also say take a psychology class, because the psychology of it is that that person may take your interaction more better because you took the chance to talk to them when normally people wouldn't talk to them because of a discriminatory physical disability. So that's what I'm saying. Never judge a book by its cover. And then try to give back, lastly. Volunteering is a great way to network. Giving back is a great way to drum up new business. But when you do it, be there for the service. Be there for the business secondary. But it's a great way that I've been able to get most of my clients, honestly. Either referrals from their friends, referrals from the government, or me volunteering somewhere and meeting them and them coming on because I helped out with their nonprofit or their charity that they work with, that would say, hey, I want you to work with my business. So I would say give back, and give back more than you get.
Wow.
If that's either the charity or serving on a public commission or board with the government. Don't just give back with charity, but give back to your city, county, or state as well. You don't have to do anything federally, but you can't say you don't want to be a part of politics locally, because locally affects you and affects your future. So you want to be a part of that at least, because you can't be upset. My biggest pet peeve when I worked for city council was when people complain about stuff but never have a solution or don't show up to the council hearings where their complaints are the most valid and then get mad that it wasn't addressed because no one showed up. So then the council doesn't think that it was an issue and they just think I'm making up or, you know, us staffers making up an issue that's really not that big. We don't have veterans or other people showing up saying, hey, I want more support for my community. So speak, have a voice, speak up. If you don't want to go in person, write a letter and you know, do a recording, send a video, sign a petition, do something.
I love it. Thank you so much.
No
that
problem.
That is great advice. And I'm definitely going to check out that book, Networking Like a Rockstar, and going to continue to do what I'm doing on LinkedIn. We actually met on LinkedIn, so it's definitely a great
platform. Yes, exactly. So it shows right there that like how you know things get done because I was able to also say, okay, who is he? Look at your LinkedIn, see that, see your link to your show, and it's like, okay, it's kind of like an unofficial business pitch in a way. That's why I tell some people they don't use their social media to their full advantage. You know, it's I even look at people's social media when before I go do a job interview or a business pitch, and then I also Google them to see what pops up on Google, the news stories. I have all that planned the day before, an hour before you meet me, so I have all this intelligence right in front of me to help me adapt to the meeting I'm in. It's sort of like when you change your resume for the different jobs you do, you got to make sure you have your don't change your authentic self, but have your know what resources or different things you should talk about to be relevant for the interaction you're going to have with that person. Because if you're you may be talking about finance and you're talking to an athlete and they're bored because you're talking about finance, but if you could talk about finances when it's related to sports, they're going to be like, okay, and keeping them rich because most athletes are broke before they leave the league. You know, that's how you come at it. You don't come at it like, oh, you know, I'm going to help you get a 600 credit score or a 700 credit score. He's like, I don't care. I'm a millionaire. I can have a 400 credit score. I'm a millionaire. You know what I mean? But if you say, I'm going to help you stay a millionaire 5 years after you leave the league, and this is I'm going to help you also still be involved with sports even after you get injured, they're going to want to work with you. So also adapt your pitch and adapt it for the industry and what's your unique value proposition for them and what's your minimum value proposition. What can you offer them today to start making money today than later? Because a lot of businesses I work with, they'll try to go with their end idea to do something. But what can you start today to start making money? You may want to be a cake maker, but you never made cakes before. So you start off making cupcakes, maybe sell them at the farmer's market, build some business. And then 6 months later, now you can call yourself a cake maker and you're at your ultimate goal to make cakes versus trying to jump into cakes, but you never made cakes before. And then realizing all the flavors you thought people wanted were none of the flavors people actually wanted.
Wow. So it's sort of like learning how to, you know, walk before you can run or crawl before
exactly.
you can walk.
Exactly. And putting the minimum amount of resources in before you – a lot of people mess up and put everything in their whole life and everything into their business where they should start off with something small first, try it out, like what I was saying earlier, fail fast, fail forward, and pivot fast. And that's where that whole comes back from for that lean model canvas. And I think everybody should make a lean canvas when they're doing a business. But basically, make this goal of what you can start off with and then build from there.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for that. And
no problem.
So important. This will definitely be an episode I'll be listening and re-listening to because you're mentioning so many great nuggets, which I love. You're like I'm the student, you're the teacher. I like it a lot.
Well, I love teaching, as you can tell. So you gave me the outlet to, you know, spread my message, not just here, but around the world.
Definitely. And I'm curious, you mentioned a few books like Grit by Duckworthy, I've read.
Great book. I'm actually trying to sneak into one of her classes. But I applied to Penn just so I can try to, like, jump into one of her classes. So we'll see. I'll let you know if that works out for me because I really like her books. The other ones I would say is any, and I'm always going to say his name wrong, but Patrick Lareny. He's the author of, you know, he's all like the five dysfunctions of teamwork, great people decisions. All the books I'm also saying are also Audible books. So, you know, these are also good if you don't like to read or if you want to listen to something in the car when you have time. That was a great book. Both of those are really to really good books to read. One book I read was another book for people. Even though I have some of a financial background, I'm not still super into finance. Was Finance for Non-Financial Managers. That's a great book to read because it just helps you understand the principles and strategies to develop your finances for your business, but it doesn't bog you down with a lot of numbers trying to make you an accountant. And then the other two books I would say, one book is Leadership Presence. It's the dramatic techniques to reach out and motivate and inspire leadership presence book by Kathy Lombard. That was another great book for me to read. And then, like I said, I listen to a number of podcasts every morning. Motley Fool, Stockwatch, CNN 5 Minute. I mean, 5 Things You Need to Know. The AP, Fox, because I try to get my dose of conservative news and liberal news. I don't want to get it from one source. And then I read, you know, some industry stuff. But I would say the biggest way to network and the biggest way to get, you know, better business knowledge is being a part of your professional association and also doing your due diligence on that, because there's a lot of organizations out there, but you kind of want to do the one that's right for you. The top one might be right for other people, but there might be another one right for you. And then also making sure it's a recognized organization, because the worst thing is to get a credential in a field and then you realize no one takes the one that you got, and you basically either overpaid or you paid for one that isn't worth the paper it's printed on.
Wow, thank you so much for that. I'm definitely going to check out all those books. I'm also going to email you some resources tell you about Scribd, which is a great place to find books. I'm curious, are you ever going to write a book yourself about your life?
I definitely do plan to. It's been, you know, one of the things that's been a back burner, and I've been asked to write books on other things. I did write a book before, but it was on, like, bookkeeping and cryptocurrency. Okay. And it's still floating out there. I wrote a number of small papers. If people Google me, I pop up all over the place, and there's a few small articles I wrote. I'm actually going to start back up my blog in the next month. And I told you I'm thinking about doing a podcast.
Yeah.
And I definitely think I'm going to – I don't know if this is going to be a full book, but it might be, but definitely I'm writing a curriculum to kind of do what I do, but for people who want to study on their own and don't want the coaching aspect, or maybe they need just, you know, a different side of coaching, like either executive or life coaching or career coaching, but they want to do the academic part themselves. I am creating writing a book. I'm trying to get other people who are good at certain areas of what I do to write different chapters themselves instead of it all being from me. But basically a guide from start to finish on starting and running a business, but also integrating, you know, some of those other things of, like I said, the financial social work aspect and making sure they get the credit right to personal development. All these other things that are important to the business outside of just the business. Because a lot of people forget you are also the CEO of you. But the CEO, yes, you could be the owner of the company or the big cheese, but the CEO, I don't like to think of them as the chief executive officer. They're the chief evangelist officer. They should be the person who's shouting the name of the business off the top of the roof. They should know also how a little bit of everything work. A best CEO is just, it's a guy. The best CEOs I've ever seen are the people who are guys and females who are former COOs or CFOs, but mostly COOs, because they know how the ins and outs of the company work and how every little thing in the company works. Well, a lot of COOs, like I had a chief operation officer when I was in the military who was a female. She had like multiple different jobs at Coast Guard.
Wow.
She was great at what she did because she knew how a lot of different things worked. And that's why I said, even if you're CEO, you don't want to do everything. Even if you're taking a small little course in it or sitting down with the CEO, CFO, or the COO, and a lot of times when you're a solopreneur, you're all those different things. Trust me, I'm all those things, right? That will help you have them do a tutoring session with you every week so you can understand these things, because you don't want to be – the worst thing is when a CEO is on the news and like, well, I don't know that happened. Well, I'm not CEO, congressman, or something like that. When they're talking about these different things, it's like, well, as a CEO, the buck stops with you, so we expect you as a CEO to know these things. But believe it or not, a lot of CEOs don't actually know how to a lot of professional ones don't actually know how to run a small business. A lot of big-time CEOs I know who try to start businesses fail because they don't actually know how to do the hands-on things. They're so used to working with organizations. A lot of our employees who become entrepreneurs fail because they're so worse to working with these organizations that have all these other support structures. But if you don't have that as a small business, you're doomed to fail. That's why I say at least take an entrepreneurship course. And even if you did or you have a degree in business, you know, take an additional course in small business, because a degree in business doesn't really tell you how to run a small business. And if you're running a nonprofit, take a course in nonprofit management. There's some free, and I'll give you some resources you can share with your viewers too. There's free online certificates in nonprofit management with basic introductions, and for-profit management with basic introductions. And then I have ones that, like, my, for example, my school offers that gives you in detailed knowledge.
Right.
And that you may want, because you say, okay, I have the basics, but I need more, you know? But it's out there. COVID is the best time for it. You got extra money with people getting, you know, unemployment, stimulus checks, tax returns. Hopefully people are PPP idle. Hopefully people are using it wisely. Not to use a pun off on my own name, but that they are using it to invest in them for when COVID's over.
Wow, thank you so much.
And
by the way, when the books come out and the podcast, I'll definitely be checking them out. I'll be just keeping posted on that. Thank you for the resources.
No problem.
Got it. And this has been an enlightening and inspiring and educational conversation. And can you go ahead and describe all the ways that people can get in touch with you if they want to use, or if they know someone who can use your services, or to put a dynamic center of influence in their network?
Yeah. So I would say, one, definitely my website, which is www.wise-associates.com. They can email me at C-W-I-S-E, so C-Wise, my first initial last name, at wise-associates.com. They can check out my LinkedIn or Google me, and I pop up in a bunch of different places. I'm not against you messaging me on Facebook, but I prefer people message me on LinkedIn because I am trying to start to separate my personal and professional life, especially now with being a parent. And sort of when I'm home, being home, and when I'm in business, being with business. And then I would say the other way they can contact our offices, which will forward to a cell phone so you can text us at this time because we're all working from home, is C-W-I-S. I mean, I already gave my email. I'm sorry, but I'll give it again anyway.
No worries.
C-W-I-S-E at wise-associates.com. And then call 202-765-0260. And if you're internationally, you can reach me on Skype if you just look up the name Wise Associates through Skype or through WhatsApp or across the web. Like I said, there's other platforms to reach me. Most things come to my cell phone. I'm known as a backpack entrepreneur. My laptop has LTE internet, so I have internet wherever I go. I have, you know, encrypted smartphone, so it's built for business, so I can talk on that. I have, you know, a printer in my backpack, a laptop, a scanner. So literally I can set up my office anywhere. I made it that way so I can work with people who sometimes can't get to me, just so I can have that mobile business capacity. I'm a true backpack entrepreneur. Like, if you ever see me in person, you're going to have to ask to see the backpack. And you're like, yeah, he literally has everything. Where he goes, it looks like that's actually his office from what I carry. And, you know, the military's trained a strong back, so I'm used to being able to carry a lot of things in my backpack. So, yeah.
Wow. Thank you so much for that. And all the information you provided will be listed in the episode description box so people can see it and read it there. All right.
Oh, awesome. The one last book I would say people to read, if you don't mind me doing this last plug, is $100 Startup. I would say that was one of the most valuable books I read. So I would say read that book. Great book. He's written many other books, and I believe he had a new version of that. But the $100 Startup really gives you a lot of ideas on how to make you think about that lean business and doing that one-page business plan. So, but like I said, if anybody's interested, we're still taking new people, and I'm always here to help. And we're also helping with PPP, EIDL, and alternative lending and credit building for personal and business. If you don't mind me plugging in my last little bit of self-plugging. but definitely, and outside of that, you know, we do the youth mentorship. 16 to 25 and and we don't call it mentorship for adults because we don't do as much as we do for the mentees, but we do the obviously because we do the life coaching with the adults, obviously because they have more resources than you know, 16 to 25 year old, or have access to more programs. So just definitely let me know if I can't directly help you. I'll either let you know what programs you qualify for in your state that I would know of, or connect you to somebody who can help you if I feel that somebody's better at it. But we don't just help you as business coaches, but connect you with a mentor too in your field to kind of help you get that more in depth, because I have the general knowledge, but I don't always have the in depth field of expertise. I'm in a lot of stuff, but I'm not in everything, at least not yet. But soon. Yeah, I always say if I don't have it today, the certification today, I'll have it tomorrow. And all my friends laugh about that because they're like, he's probably like 60% serious. I am just a student of life. But definitely, thank you for giving me the time. Thank you for letting me step on my soapbox. I'm glad you told me before the interview that I kind of was able to rant, because I know some of my friends who hear this are like, Connor was just ranting, but you allowed me to do that, and we talked about that. So I want to let my friends know I have permission, so I don't want to hear it later. So, and especially my sister, you know who I'm talking about. So I'm pretty sure she's going to call me later, so I don't want to hear it, Alicia. Thank you. This great opportunity, like I said, it kind of fired up my belly of getting back and actually using my journalism degree that my sister tells me I never used more than 2 years of. So I didn't waste my money, and that's another thing, sis. I really enjoyed this. I'm glad I was able to share, you know, what I love and what I'm doing, not just what I'm doing, but, you know, some of the causes that are important to me to the global community at large. And I want to thank you, especially with the D.C. statehood. Make sure everybody call your senators and tell them, make us a state and stop playing games. To, you know, talking about, you know, working with minority entrepreneurs, to some of the charities and different things that I work with and things like that. So I definitely thank you a lot. And would love to come back on the show again with talk about some other things and other resources. So never hesitate. And everybody out there, like I said, just remember you have that work-life balance. Find that mentor. Find that support circle. And make sure you're investing in yourself now while you have the time and additional money too. There's programs out there that are free or even $50 to $200 that you can invest. And most of the stuff you can write off back on your taxes anyway. So take the plunge now while you can. Because you're going to regret it later. There is no, don't say you. I hate when people say you have all the time in the world, you could do it later. Yes and no. It depends on the situation, but just get it done now. Just get it done now. Invest now, and if you don't use it, you can use it when you want to, but at least you know you got it off the box, and you won't have regrets later in the future.
Definitely. Thank you so much for that. That is so amazing. And this was a great episode. And so I'm sure the audience learned so much from you. I wanted to thank you for coming on as a guest. Thank you to the audience for listening. I'm going to see you guys in the next episode. Everyone, take care and have a wonderful, blessed day. Thank you so much, and bye-bye.
No problem. Bye-bye. Thank you.
Take care. Hey, guys, before you go, just real quick, if you can just do me a favor, if you can head over to the Apple Podcast app. And if you're not there already, and if you can leave me a 5-star review, that would be great. If you love the show, if you can just go ahead and do that, and that will help to spread the word about the show, and other people can enjoy the show as much as you do. And so if you can do that, that would mean the world to me. And also, if you want to email me with any feedback or any praise or support, please feel free to go ahead and do that. And you can also email me to request to be put on our email list. So we can send you out emails when new episodes come out. So thank you very much for being a fan of the show. Thank you for listening to the show and supporting the show. So if you can do that, go out and give us a 5-star review on the Apple Podcast app. That would be great. And if you can email us
so we can put you on the email list and email us with feedback and praise. That'd be amazing. Thank you so much, and I'll see you guys in the next episode. Take care. Bye-bye.